save the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 116 of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you as I do every week. And joining me is the partner in crime, Mike W. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, indeed. It is a good evening. Did you have any big plans over the weekend?
Oh, I was in Terre Haute getting my kids out of the hair of my wife, who was studying for exams and such. So that time of year.
Of course. It was the holiday Christmas party for me. Good times.
Mm-hmm.
I did Kimi Räikkönen and proud.
Yeah, you did.
If you've seen my Twitter account, I did Kimi Räikkönen and proud. And on top of it, somehow, I walked out when we left the area, which was the college union, if you will. They have a big, big, like, banquet hall in there. And that's where we chose to have it, or they chose to have it, because they were planning it well before my arrival. And somehow I ended up heading to the after festivities in a Porsche. And I was driving. Don't ask me how it happened. My Mazda stayed in the parking lot, and somebody said, hey, I'm not feeling overly hot. Can you drive me to, you know, can you drive us to the after party? And I said, sure, where's your car? And they said, over there. And there sat the little Porsche. I was like, God damn.
Have another drink, sir.
Yeah, right. I was like, please, pass out.
Have a really big drink.
Yeah. Well, the odd part about it was actually a female.
Oh, my.
I was like, yeah, I'll drive it. So needless to say, zooming through University of Central Missouri campus was Sean Paddock, channeling his inner American Le Mans Series GT class. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't the biggest Porsche. In fact, it was probably the bottom-end Porsche. But when I smashed my foot to the accelerator, I couldn't tell a difference. Because it sounded just like, wait for it, a Porsche. And my friends, there are few things on this planet that sound better than a Porsche of any type revving up into the 5,000, 6,000 RPM range.
Nice.
Yeah. I needless to say, I was like, yeah, life's complete now. Well, I need to drive a Ferrari, but that was an item on the bucket list, so not often that you can say you can do that. So I'm glad you were entertained. You were sending me some rather lively tweets. A little wily and you're out there in Terre Haute.
Well, you know, I figure at some point, you know, you're going to get an offer from the Renault team. I mean, you're living the Kimi Räikkönen lifestyle, so.
Mm. You know,
fit right in.
I try to do Mr. Räikkönen a service because, you know, Lord knows I bash out him enough as it is because of his lazy work ethic. But, you know, I hope he does well at the Renault team. So, but we'll get into Kimi later and we'll finish up with my escapades, as it were, and get into the reason why people listen to the show, and that is for their weekly dose of motorsport news. And we're going to start with sports car. We have one bit of interesting news out of sports car, a little retaliation, if you will. We have some IndyCar news, lots of signings starting to kind of crop up, and, you know, that's cool. Mazda Road to Indy, a few stories coming out of Mazda Road to Indy that we should mention, or at least Doug has seen to it that we will mention. And we have a couple stories in Rally, and then of course we would be remiss if we didn't go into the circus, the traveling international circus that is Formula One. So we'll go ahead and get things started in the realm of sports car. And as you know, there's been a big stink made about The Rolex, or the, you know, the Grand Am Sports Car Series, the ones who host the Rolex 24 here in the States, that is coming up. And it made some big news that that this year they were going to have Ferrari and Audi and a couple other cool people, along with their Daytona Corvette prototype that they had released. So, you know, all was well in the realm of Grand Am. And the ALMS was a wee bit upset that they did not have the Audi R8 LMS car in the series, so it will now be the Audi R8 LMS in the America Le Mans series, adding yet another manufacturer, if you will, or at least another type of manufacturer, not necessarily factory support. But we will see the LMS Audis joining the ranks against the Ferraris, against the Jaguar, the Ford, the Porsches, and all the all of really the fantastic sports cars that everybody just loves to watch, because you can watch them on the track on Sunday. And if you're a well-off businessman or a drunken guy from Finland who rides snowmobiles, you can go to the dealership and buy that car on Monday. So it will now be the Audi R8 LMS, and it will be in the GT Championship.
Very nice.
Yeah, I'm very happy about this, actually. It's the GT3 base car, the one they kind of run in the FIA's little deal or whatever that they have over there in Europe, that us American folk ain't allowed to watch or really be a part of, unless you subscribe to things like Autosport or Racer. And this is really seen as a shot from ALMS across the bow of Grand Am, saying, hey, I'm not so fast. You're not going to be the only folks in town running this car. And, you know, Audi really is, you know, with the work that the diesel prototypes have done in recent years, especially here in America, you know, the Audi is going to be obviously an instant fan favorite. The car looks amazing. The sound is unheard of. But it looks like they're going to have to develop a special GTE engine for the cars that are going to go racing.
Well, that would make sense, because the Audi R8 that they run in, say, the Grand Am series is going to be significantly different than the ALMS, because the Grand Am series, their GT class is something under GT3. It's pretty detuned. In fact, you could probably go to the showroom and buy a car that could go faster than the GT class.
Oh, now tune that down a little bit. Yeah, but I mean, if you look at it, the Saudi's going to compete against Ferrari, Porsche, Corvette, BMW, Jaguar. I mean, this GT field. I mean, when do we say enough is enough and eliminate the prototypes and just call this the U.S. GT Championship?
Yeah, I don't know, man. And it would make sense to do that, because the prototypes are just making the show a little bit more ridiculous. Hey, we've got this great race going on between the GT cars, but we're muddling it up with like three prototypes and two different classes. And
exactly. It's like since when have prototypes become like the back markers, if you will, of the race? You know what I mean? Granted, they're infinitely more faster than their GT counterparts, but you know, the way they work their way through the field so fast sometimes. I mean, it used to be that the GT cars were kind of the moving chicane. Now it's like, oh yeah, here's a race. And to make things interesting, we've added a couple really fast prototypes.
Yeah.
How will our GT counterparts deal?
Nice.
So, because they are not the show anymore, at least here in the States. Now, granted, they're going to move on to their World Endurance Championship in 2012. And, you know, prototypes will be next to unheard of here in the States. Granted, I think they still have quite a few that are trying to get into the show who don't have the kind of cash to run the World Endurance Championship. But you're not going to have Audi there. You're not going to have Peugeot there. You're not going to have, you know, Toyotas, you might have Aston Martin, but it'd be Aston Martins versus Mazda. And let's be realistic here. Each car has its tracks, where it has its strengths, and where it has its weaknesses. So, shall be interesting, for sure. But, yeah, interesting little bit coming out of there and seen as a direct shot across the face of Grand Am.
Yeah.
To make sure that Grand Am knows that they're not really gaining a one up, if you will, on the competition, as it were.
Yeah, well, there's a foreshadowing. Speaking of a direct shot from NASCAR across the bow of IndyCar this weekend.
Oh, good Lord. That's just bad.
One Tony Stewart won the IndyCarting Classic. It's classic because it's the first year.
Instant classic,
where a handful of NASCAR drivers and a handful of IndyCar drivers all showed up and they raced around on the track and one Tony Stewart came away with the win. He took the win over the likes of Alex Tagliani. Austin Dillon was there, NASCAR guy. John Andretti, who's kind of toe in both worlds.
Yeah,
a handful of IndyCar drivers were there. Oh, geez, I'm trying to remember who all was there. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay was there, Thomas Schechter, Ed Carpenter, Jay Howard, Joseph Newgarden. Granted, Tagliani was probably the biggest name competing in it. For IndyCar, I would say that they didn't get their highest level of talent there, whereas Tony Stewart has shown himself to be one of the guys that can race and win in anything on a consistent basis. So it's pretty cool to see him win in a go-kart, even though a go-kart probably would be far more weight. Far more touchy on weight than any other car you could drive in, just because of how small the horsepower is on the engine and how ultra light the cars are compared to, you know, the body mass of the individual driving.
Yeah.
Tony is not a little boy. He's a little bit littler this year than he has been in the past, but he is not a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big win for him and a major disappointment for the IndyCar stars who style themselves good at go-karts.
Yeah. Well, my favorite part of the whole entire thing is the fact that Tony Stewart was sporting the JD Byrider sponsorship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just classic Indiana right there.
Yeah, he runs a JD Byrider and Bass Pro Shop Armor All stuff on all of his sprint cars, both in USAC and World of Outlaws. So those are sponsors that he's pulled from those different teams, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool indeed. And I'm still wishing I would not mind seeing Mr. One Tony Stewart come back and try to do the double if they ever would open it up.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. He'd probably win just because it would appear that IndyCar doesn't have anybody that's faster than him.
Or at least that was competing in a slick go-kart.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, you've got this opportunity to go up against NASCAR's stars, and Tony Stewart's going to be there. Why don't you get your best guys there?
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Doesn't make any sense.
Tagliani
really was the only guy that I looked at and was like, wow, you know, they're putting their best foot forward. But
Commitments from the other stars, but yeah, would have been interesting to see what would have happened had you inserted the likes of a Franchitti or a Power, or hell, even an Andretti, or you know, or a TK.
Yeah.
See what happens there. Those guys have proven to be fast. I wouldn't have even minded seeing somebody like, I know Martin Plowman was real busy with a lot of sponsorship work with the Snowball Express folks over the weekend and everything, but rumor has it that guy can muscle a go-kart around. I mean, this guy's constantly tweeting about his karting antics, and I mean, he's actually pretty good at it. It would be interesting to see. I would like to see him out there as well. I think he would have been pretty good against the old Tony Stewart. So, all right. Well, it looks like there's another Brazilian track coming about. And it's a Tilkey track, your favorite, Tilkey Neuter tracks.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting about this is this track doesn't exist. However, they have announced their intent to try and woo IndyCar. So I would say this is a bit premature.
Nice.
This new track would be located adjacent to the Beto Carrera World Kart facility. Don't even know where it's at. Yeah. Whatever the case, it's a Tilkey track. There's nothing really more to say about it other than it's a Tilkey track with all kinds of loop-de-doops and whatever. I mean, it almost has a layout that's reminiscent of Barber, with the like the inner hairpin that they have there.
Oh, yeah.
But regardless, I can't say I'm. You know, that no information's been released about the length of the track, number of corners, that sort of thing. I mean, you can look at the overhead shot that they have on Speed TV's website, but who knows, you know, how this is going to end up. Who knows if this is even going to get built?
Mm-hmm.
This is way premature. Just like apparently Porto Alegre, talk of having a street race in Porto Alegre has been. So we'll believe it when we see it, but it's always cute when people say, hey, we're going to have an IndyCar race.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that, Phoenix says, hey, we're going to have an IndyCar race.
Yes. They said they were at least open to the idea of coming back, and in this day and age of fans moving away from the high-banked, high-speed ovals of years past, it looks like Phoenix would fit right in on IndyCar's new niche of trying to hook up all these short ovals.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix has been considered one of the better IndyCar tracks for years, and even with NASCAR's, they've added progressive banking to, I believe, turn one and two. You're still looking at the highest banking on the track is about 11 degrees, eight to 9 degrees of bank in turns three and four, 10 to 11 degrees of bank in one and two, as well as a dog leg on the back straight. Pretty interesting arrangement they've got there, and the fact that they've got the progressive banking and variable banking. You know, when you go from, you know, one end of the track to the other, you get, you know, different setup issues and such. Would be interesting to see how IndyCars would go there. Don't know what exactly is going on with Phoenix in that they finally have said, yeah, we'd be interested in talking. If you recall, Randy Bernard's the one that basically said that he thought the Phoenix track president should be fired because he had not talked to – he hadn't even bothered to respond to Randy Bernard's inquiries about having races at Phoenix.
Yeah, that does not go well for having a relationship. You know, it's like, you know, if you want somebody to do you any favors, you know – you don't want to kind of piss them off by coming out and saying stuff like that.
Yeah,
that I mean, for sure.
I wonder how that went down. You know, the guy's in his office at Phoenix. You know, and he mockingly says, "I heard this yapping noise. It sounded like a chihuahua outside my door."
Oh, look, it's IndyCar.
It's IndyCar. Oh, IndyCar, you're so cute.
A homely looking animal. Come on in. We feel bad for you because you suck.
let me phrase this properly. Phoenix says we'd be open to IndyCar returning to Phoenix in 2013 if they're willing to give us a deal that Vegas got. I'm sure that's how this is all going down now.
It is now because Vegas isn't coming back.
Yeah, that's also true.
So why not use Phoenix as a race or a market, you know, like that, have big time. You know, Phoenix is a nice city. I've been there one time. I was there for 6 weeks, and it was an absolutely fantastic city.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's obviously a big fan base there from years past when IndyCar used to run there. I think – and it's a nice area. I mean, people would like to go to Phoenix. I mean, they've hosted the Super Bowl. They have fantastic nightlife. I speak from experience. The city is pretty easy to navigate. I mean, it's just a giant grid, basically. And you're right there around everything. I mean, it would be I think Phoenix would be a great idea. And I think that if you did a deal, kind of like you did with Vegas, now that you have that spot open, at least, I mean, they may not have it open in 2013, depending on what Vegas does, and we'll get into that in just a sec. But I think that if you put that money down there in Phoenix, I think that you can, you know, you could really make something of it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Phoenix is a great market. It's a vacation destination, not just, you know, Vegas certainly was as well. Now, one of the problems, though, that I've got to be very careful, you know. Here's the situation. IndyCar fans said the thing they wanted most, and Randy Bernard heard, the thing they wanted most was getting back to Milwaukee. So Randy got us a race at Milwaukee, mm-hmm. and 13,000 people showed up.
Oh, 13,000? I thought it was just 13.
Yeah, that was about it. Me and two crickets.
Nice.
And Doug. Doug was there, too.
Oh, yes, well, of course.
And my two buddies. You know, we had a great time. It was a good race.
Yeah.
But then this year we go to Vegas, and granted the tragedy that occurred at Vegas, but the fact of the matter is they gave away 80,000 tickets to the place. They hyped the thing all season. It was basically everything you know was up on IndyCar's website the entire year. It was this little Vegas logo in the corner and all this hype about the event and talk it up and da 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 da, and 20,000 people showed up. Really? I mean, that's pretty pathetic if you're going to spend all year hyping this event and 20,000 people show up to make it look like your track, had a monster truck rally or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So going on from that, hey, let's do it in Phoenix. I mean, maybe Phoenix has a better chance, and I certainly hope it does, but I'm getting pretty cynical as to what we're going to see at some of these oval tracks this year.
Mm.
Fontana?
Yeah.
That'll right.
That'll be interesting. let's see. We just kind of got into it a bit there just a second ago, and that is IndyCar has decided that it's not going to renew its deal with Las Vegas. Obviously, remember the huge deal that was made of Las Vegas. A three-year deal was signed to host the race. The season finale there was going to be massive parties, much like we've seen this past year, made into a real tradition. And then, obviously, the tragedy that happened. And IndyCar has decided that it would be best not to go back to Las Vegas, at least next year. And so they've bought out of the contract for the time being. So yeah, they bought out of 2012 for sure, and we're just waiting to see. Randy Bernard has said that the cars and the teams will test at the speedway, but they're not going to make a commitment to go racing until they figure out exactly what all went down with the Dan Weldon tragedy. So
And I would say another part of that is, and it has been hinted at, another part of that is they have no idea how this new car is going to react in traffic. They have no idea how it's going to race on ovals. And they're having nothing but trouble right now in the initial testing phase using this new car and the funky weight balance issues that they've been having. Maybe it's in their best interest to punt this year in favor of gathering better information and then making a good decision for next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who, you know, one way or the other, they don't really know where they want to go with it. But it will, some people say, you know, well, why can't we see it? And, you know, it wasn't the track's fault. It was the cars. It was the idea of the race, yada, yada, yada. I think it's good just for at least this year anyways to just take a step back, just this year and see, you know, exactly what's going on and finish the investigation and then move from there. So, you know, I'm not for never going back, but I'm also not for having it this year, yeah. Basically. I don't blame oval racing. I don't think this is a product of oval racing, but I think given the situation – I think it's best to just kind of back off a little bit and maybe come back, another time. So.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you.
All right. Well, along with that, Looks like the IndyCar teams will get Christmas here by the end of the week. As the IndyCar, or as Dallara, rather, excuse me, has announced that December 15th will be the time that the Izod IndyCar Series gets their Dallara DW12. All 14 teams at this moment.
Jeez.
There are 14 entries. I'm not sure if it's 14 teams or just specific entries, but yes, they now get the DW12.
Nice. On IndyCar's website, they have a picture of a giant box that apparently holds a chassis in it. Stamped on one end, it says, "Caution, this end heavier than the other."
Hey, be careful with the back of that car.
It's got a little junk in the trunk.
Yeah. A little heavy.
Yeah, well. A lot of good this does. You know, they can get it in... I don't know. Can they put it on a shaker rig without an engine in it? Probably not. Can they? What can they actually do with this chassis at this point, other than maybe start fitting it out, tweaking it up, seeing, you know, what kind of adjustments they have with it, and get far more intimate with it? But until they can strap an engine in the thing, looking at you, Lotus.
yeah, no comment.
Not going to be seeing much out of these. So, yeah, it's good that it's finally come around that Christmas in December is here.
Mm-hmm.
But that leads us into the next area. They were working with the DW12 out at Homestead this week. Apparently, it's the first time they've actually ran the cars in traffic. They had a Honda and a Chevy fitted chassis.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time they've ever tried to run these together in traffic, and you know, the response from the drivers was that it seemed to be pretty solid. If you recall, you know, most of the downforce on the car is being generated from the underbody, so there should be less turbulence. And the one thing they did say is not only is there less turbulence, there's a huge wash behind these cars, so it's making it much easier to draft. So that's potentially a very good thing.
Oh yeah.
Because if you don't like side by side racing, well, if you can get a really good good slingshot off of another car, they're not going to be side by side for long.
No.
So something it's a non driver influenced rear wing system like they have in Formula One, DRS system.
yes. The Fovertaking?
Yes, Fovertaking has taken on a new term.
Oh my.
Yeah, well, anyway. They were working with some of the lighter gearbox componentry, and there's continued talk that they're either going to there's continued talk that most likely the solution is going to be to add ballast to the front of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to get us back to where we were. I mean, we're going to be all of the same weight that we were before this supposed super lighter chassis that requires less horsepower. Well, it won't be a super lighter chassis. Therefore, it will not require less horsepower. It will require more horsepower.
Yeah.
Great. So I would make a slight wager that the engines will not be modified in any way, shape, or form. However, they'll go from E85 to like E70 or E60, get that extra BTUs out of the fuel, and the next thing you know, the cars are going slightly faster.
Oh, of course. All right. Well, on top of the car. Did you already say you covered the oval?
Yeah, went through the oval. The thing that concerns me is we've gone through, you know, this whole new iteration of IndyCar, and we've talked about, you know, how we want the, you know, Rand Bernard has played up the idea of going after the speed records at Indy again, and right now we're pretty far away from getting to those speed records. And if this thing gets out on track, and it's not just slightly below pace of the previous car, if it's significantly below pace of the previous car, you got to know that that's going to be a bit of a crap storm for Dallara and for IndyCar.
Yeah.
So Hopefully this one doesn't turn out to be an inelegant pig.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. So hopefully, I guess we'll just see what happens once it finally gets on track, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't really, you know, to be honest with you, as long as it kind of resembles an open wheel car, I don't really care. I just don't want it to look like a Delta Wing. And I don't want it to look like the car they have been driving, which I've seen for, I don't know, half my life. So, no offense. I'm a traditionalist, pure, you know, through and through, but Christ almighty, I mean, I can't stomach that thing anymore. It just makes me sick. News about the old scholarship, the scholarship given out to the USAC champion, Mr. Clausen, Mr. Brian Clausen.
Once again, Brian Clausen.
Yeah, right? I mean, damn, if this guy can fund like a whole season off of just winning the USAC championship, I mean, this might be the way to go. Sure sounds like a lot more fun than trying to, you know, barter with sponsors to get money. You know, I'm just going to win this scholarship again.
Yeah.
So.
Not, you know, you recall last year the scholarship went towards running him in the ovals in Indy Lights. It sounds like, I don't know if they had the option last year, but it sounds like this year they have the option to use that money however they like. And Randy Bernard has been talking with Brian Clausen, and Brian has said that he would be very interested in taking that money and applying it to an Indy program, an Indy 500 program. And I can't see anything wrong with that because if you take it to Indy Lights, what are you going to get in Indy Lights? What, three ovals? I mean, how many ovals are they actually going to race on next year? I think they're going to have four ovals total next season. And one of those being Indy, but no, not Indy. And, oh, jeez, what a mess. I don't know. I'm glad to see he's using it, is considering using it for the 500, because I think that makes a whole lot more sense than trying to fake us all in that he has a chance at landing an IndyCar seat, especially when they've gone from, you know, like seven ovals last year to four this coming season.
Yeah, like two.
Yeah, that may be where it ends up.
Yeah, sounds like it anymore, Jesus. So,
anyway.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind seeing him run in the 500 if he can get in the show. Big thing about Indy 500, obviously, is can you get in the show? And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how that all works itself out. Let's see. Oh, let's talk about a couple of drivers. A couple of driver announcements were made. Three, actually, right out of the gate here that I can think of. Simone Pagenaud signs with Sam Schmidt Motorsports in the IndyCar Series for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen him do some very impressive work last year in the few showings that he had. And it, you know, obviously coming from formerly of Champ Car status, it'll be cool to see Mr. Pagenaud get out there and take to the track for a full season of IndyCar racing. I'll be excited. You know, you may remember Mr. Pagenaud from such episodes as the American Le Mans Series LMP1 with the Highcroft Acura team when he was teamed with David Brabham. So they won the American Le Mans Series Championship, and they had, four wins, three poles. The guy drives for Peugeot in Le Mans. I mean, he's not bad, just saying. So, it'll be really cool to see him drive a full year out there for 2012. So, and it kind of starts kind of one of the things that I noticed as well, because we had news today that Catherine Legg, who is formerly of DTM status, running over the German touring cars and formerly of Champ Car, will now also be an Indy car with a team to be announced. But apparently she has sponsorship, enough sponsorship to get her out into the world, as it were, and we will find out more in the coming days. I'm thinking that it may be a Dryan Reinbold seat. That's my guess. Completely an educated guess.
Do you think it will be the Lotus back to Dryden Reinbold's seat?
I think so.
Hmm. Wow.
I do.
Dryden Reinbold, or excuse me, Lotus, an equal opportunity employer.
Mm-hmm. Here in the States, that's a tax credit.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Well, no, it's a women-owned business. Sarah Fisher has that.
And also we had news that Joseph Newgarden will be stepping up from his Firestone Indy Lights days to race with Sarah Fisher Racing, which is no longer Sarah Fisher Racing. It is Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing.
Yeah, that's a
Willis Wink Hartman has now become a new co-owner in that operation.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because he ended up hearing that Sarah Fisher was struggling back in 2008 and ended up signing a check so her team could compete in the 500.
Mm.
Later on, he's the one that bought Sarah her brand new chassis that she was so excited about a couple of years ago, and now he's coming on board as a partner on the team. So I can't imagine that Sarah is concerned about that. She's probably pretty excited to have him along to help out, you know, financially and as well as being a partner on the team. So yeah. Deal for her.
Yeah, anything that keeps that team afloat in any way, shape, or form, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Because we found out after the Dollar General was going to be leaving, all hell broke loose. So, you know, a lot of people are upset about that. Sarah Fisher Racing's future was definitely in question when they lose the title sponsor of the team. To have Mr. Hartman and his oil companies and all that oil money come on board, certainly not too shabby. And he's shown that he's more than willing to help out. So I can now officially say, Dollar General, you're fired.
Yeah, Joseph Newgarden's program, at least at this point, there's not a definitive list of races he's going to be in. They've basically made it known that they're trying to get it to be a full season effort, but at this point it is not. And like I said, they haven't announced how many races the program currently is at, which races those are going to be. We don't know. So very cool, though, to see Joseph Newgarden getting a seat in the IndyCar series.
Yeah, and he deserved it after the Indy Lights clinic he put on this year.
I certainly think he's going to be a guy who acquits his name well in IndyCar.
So. Yes. Well, here's a name that we've heard quite a bit of over the past year. Michael Cannon.
Yeah, he's been bouncing, hasn't he?
He has. This guy, I mean, geez. Hate to do his taxes at the end of the year. That'd be a hell of a W-2 list the way he's going.
Yeah. He came from KV, who was first of all, he quit HBM to be Tony Kanaan's engineer at KV, and then was fired from KV, you know, with a few weeks left to go in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's landing at
Ed Carpenter Racing.
Sheesh. Yeah. What?
Yeah, Ed Carpenter Racing.
Okay, let's get this all together. You've got Derek Walker coming in to help run the team. You've got Michael Cannon coming together with Ed Carpenter. You know, these aren't names where you just throw them around and say, you know, these are guys that just are putting together an effort and they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
These are some pretty well-known guys.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be pretty shocked if this is just a mid-pack team this year.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. They will be a mid-pack team because Ed Carpenter does not have a lot of good experience on ovals on road courses. So you've got a problem there. Do they get enough funding, though, having those names all on board to possibly run another car? I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, along with that, Mr. Carpenter released the 2012 livery for his car. And as you can pretty much imagine, it looks just like any Fuzzy's Vodka car, only it has a 2012 body style slapped on it. So, there you have it. So good to see that that's moving right along. A little disappointing that we at the paddock weren't able to secure Fuzzy's sponsorship for the 100 Acre Wood Rally, but, you know, I figured I'd be more than fitting for a Vodka sponsorship. But, you know, I understand. I'm going to keep Ed Carpenter in the series, so, you know, I'll let it go this time. So, you know. So, no, but yeah, you're right. I think this team's going to be fantastic next year. You know, obviously he does struggle a bit on the road courses and everything, but everybody's going to be starting fresh with a new car. And, you know, they've got good talent. I mean, Derek Walker, look at what he's done with that Falcon Porsche.
Yeah.
So, I mean, once that was a back of the pack operation. And once he showed up and started running the team, if you will, that team really took off. And I mean, they were winning races. So it'll be interesting to see how they do. It'll be interesting to see how they do for, the ovals, especially. That should definitely be a threat on the ovals, I would think, provided this team doesn't suck. So, or I mean, not the team, but the car rather. That the car doesn't suck, not the team. As you know, Ed's a good driver. Also, you know, Derek Walker. Also, now Michael Cannon. I mean, this guy is getting some good talent. And Fuzzy, it's good to see Fuzzy really kind of giving the money, if you will, to support such a roster. Let's see. So interesting. Let's see. Speaking, let's move on and speak of the Lotus Works teams. you remember those teams that everybody makes fun of because they don't have an engine? Yeah. Well, it was announced that their cars will look much like the Lotus cars in Formula One that we've seen this year with the black and gold livery. If you can remember the old Johnny Player special colors. You know, when Lotus was in its prime heyday of Formula One racing, much different than what it is now as a pure backmarker or mid-pack drunk Finnish hiring team. Yes, I know people will hate me for it, but I said it. Like I said before, I'm happy he's in the sport, so don't send me any hate mail or tell me how much you hate me because I always talk badly about Kimi or how you're always tired of it, because if you're still listening, that means that you obviously don't care how much I rag on him. So, but yeah, so it looks like black and gold cars. Those should look pretty sweet, I think.
Yeah, now the caveat, Danny Behar was talking about this and, you know, talking up the Lotus F1 team and the various offshoots that they're going to do. And what he theorized was that Brian Herta and Dryden Reinbold would be running the black and gold. Mm. However, HVM has gotten dispensation to go ahead and run green as their primary color, to tie in with their nuclear sponsor. Mm. So
Clear
good deal
Energy.
Clear Energy, green nuclear, you know. Mm. Anyway, they also said that customer teams, you know, people buying into the product, whatever, may go ahead and go with the green and yellow livery, but full factory teams will be the black and gold. So whatever, it'll be interesting to see if more than three teams are running Lotus next year, the way things are going.
Yeah.
But.
All right. Well, let's look here as well. Let's move into the Mazda Road Indy. And Ballardi, I always want to call him Ballardi Autosport. I believe that to be the name. Sorry if I made a mistake there, or Ballardi Motorsport. It's one of those. Regardless, great news from them, as they're launching four cars in the USF 2000. Four. This USF 2000 thing is taking off quite nice.
Yep.
So they've put their chips in and are content on building their brand as a team, especially in the junior formulas. And they even added two drivers, Colin Thompson, who's the F1600 champion, and Skip Barber, national champion Scott Anderson. So F1600 driver Colin Thompson and 2011 Skip Barber national champion Scott Anderson are now also going to be in the fold there. So good stuff. And the thing that I like about this is the fact that, you know, these teams are really starting to see a value in developing talent at the lowest levels possible for the longest time, IndyCar has always been one of those where people just kind of come in, you know, whether it be, you know, back in the day anyways, you know, from the USACs or from the karting realms, or maybe some guys over in Europe who weren't quite good enough for Formula One but could do IndyCar. But now we're seeing young kids literally pulled into the fold at such a young age, much like we see in the UK and most of Europe, where they all have their national championships and they funnel their drivers up into the Formula One realm. Or at least the GP2 and whatnot. And now it looks like we're starting to see some of that in the F2000 arena here in the United States as well, which is fantastic news, actually. So, you know, get a lot of good young American drivers, or try to get a lot of good young American drivers in the series and develop that American talent that everybody says we need. So I am all for it. You?
Indeed. And it's good to see them actually putting their money where their mouth is and hiring American drivers.
So. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, news from Andretti Autosport is that they have re-signed Sage Karam to the Star Mazda Championship. So it'll be Sage's second year in the championship. And, you know, honestly, I think this is a good move. Obviously, we here at the site think very highly of Mr. Karam. He's a fantastic driver. And he's a great person to talk to as well. From the times, you know, that I've talked to him, especially over in Indianapolis, he's a fantastic person to be around, a real true professional. And he's now going to be, you know, he's going to get one more year of seasoning down in the Star Mazda Championship before making his imminent push into the Firestone Indy Lights with Andretti, I'm sure. So, yeah, we could be looking. You know, he had a real good run of luck there towards the middle last half of the season. Potentially maybe even see maybe a 2012 champion here. Because Karam has shown that he can adapt to any car. You know, it may take, like with S2000, or not S2000, I'm sorry, with the Star Mazda, it took him a little bit more time this time than it did in the F2000. But I'm telling you, he got to grips with it, and the guy is absolutely fast. So he'll make his way through. He's going to win races this year, and he's going to be a championship contender. So there you have that. So good stuff for sure. Look forward to watching his progress throughout the year. And also the final news is, and this is going to be tough for me, even though I practiced like six times before the show, JDC has signed a new talent as well for the Star Mazda Championship. And that is Colombian teenager Juan
Pedrajita.
Yes, Pedrajita. So, yes, so he's joined JDC Motorsport and will also be competing in the Mazda the Star Mazda Championship, with hopes of potentially one day making it up to the Firestone Indy Lights. So JDC is a great team, absolutely great team, top-notch people there as well. And they're going to try to take a second consecutive championship, fourth overall in the Star Mazdas. So Mr. Pedrajita was a USF 2000 driver before and will now be joining the JDC for the full 18 race Star Mazda calendar. So impressive.
Indeed.
So good. It's always good news to see the Star Mazda stuff. You know, seeing young drivers and teams securing the works of other young talented drivers, whether it be American, whether it be Colombian, whether it be Brazilian, whether it be English. You know, it's good to see the championship, you know, pushing on. So, let's see. Now we're going to get into the WRC, a little rally racing, because what would be a show without it? I'm scratch, going through withdrawals. Nice. So I'm eagerly counting down the days to Monte Carlo, which is coming up here soon. But right now the FIA is working to make sure that North One Sports stays afloat and does not collapse under the latest CSI row, if you will. If you remember, we've talked for the last couple of weeks about one Vladimir Antonov, who was arrested in London after being accused of completely pillaging a bank for a bank or a company of all of its assets. You know, those sly guys.
Yeah.
They will pillage.
Apparently they pulled him over and they found Viking horns in his trunk.
Oh, Lord.
You know, Viking horns and a short sword. And what's in your wallet?
Oh, that is awful. I don't even know why I laughed.
You didn't laugh very hard.
I know. I shouldn't have even gotten that kind of a response.
Okay. So the thing that really has to be concerning on this whole deal is how this affects the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I am wrong, but there is some sort of signing date that these teams have to commit to the championship for next year, and that has been extended by the FIA because nobody has signed up.
Well, people have signed up except for Ford.
Okay.
So we're waiting kind of for Ford to, because, you know, it's typically one of those like late race things where, you know, people are not jumping all over it immediately. They'll wait up till, you know, the last second, submit their entry, whatever. It's pretty well known that Citroen's going to be in next year with their drivers. Mini as well is going to be in, and Volkswagen is preparing this year as well. But, yeah, really the deadline was made to be extended for Ford because, like we said last week, if Ford pulls out, you know, it's going to be, you know, they say it's, the FIA and the WRC say, that they're working on an immediate plan to ensure the fundamental sporting and safety elements will be in place for the start of the 2012 season, which is, from their press release. However, they said because of that, we're going to push back that date to 19 December. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that this is also being done to accommodate Ford, because Ford also hasn't pushed in their bit of the championship either. Whether or not Ford's decision to run in the championship has anything to do with this whole North One Sport CSI, you know, securing the long-term future of the sport, obviously Ford's not going to want to commit to a long-term deal with M Sport or anybody if it finds out that North One or CSI takes steps back in regards to the World Rally Championship and coverage further depletes, which according to some of my European friends can't really go much further back. But yes, if they pushed it forward to secure Ford, and this is just, I think, Ford trying to work out, hey, you know, you got this company going bankrupt. How do we know the sport's even going to continue to prosper or grow like it has? You know, we don't want to be a part of that unless we have guarantees. And so now I think that the FIA is working to secure those, to secure, you know, North One Sport and then eventually bring Ford back into the mix once a deal, you know, once Ford feels as though the waters are stable enough to kind of jump back in. I think that's what we're kind of waiting on.
Yeah.
Because I was told from Ford, I was told specifically from Ford World Rally Team that we would be hearing soon of their plans, you know, but it's still, you know, it's today was the deadline originally, and we've heard nothing from Ford.
Yeah. Okay.
And that, so we've got a week for Ford to make up their mind.
Yeah, and you know, just like you said, does it have anything to do with this whole mess? It's quite possible that Ford is looking at it, and that might be one more thing in there, in the not so favor of WRC. That right now it looks like its promoter is going into receivership, and it might just be one more thing they can take to the board to convince them that they don't want to be there. So hopefully it doesn't work out that way, and we have Ford back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at Volkswagen, for example, Volkswagen was really pressing the FIA and the promoting, you know, the commercial rights people, the promoters and all that, to get a TV deal done for Germany. They wanted Germany to have a new TV deal in the works, because they weren't going to put their car in the championship if their car wasn't going to be seen in their home country. And the FIA cordially agreed to, you know, help out a little bit with that, and got a new deal signed for the WRC to be on in Germany. And now it looks like, just on that logic alone, I mean, this shaky kind of, you know, one step forward, three steps back mentality from the FIA and North One Sport, you know, could be part of what's hanging up Ford. You know, they could really just want to make sure that commercial money is there and the investment is there to make the WRC grow and become yet again another premier championship in the world, which I can't see how it's not already, because they're really the only ones at a global stage who do what they do. But we're going to be waiting to find out precisely what's going to happen with that. And so I think that may have a little bit of something to do with it now. Maybe not before, but when this surfaced, it certainly probably had Ford step back and ask themselves, do we really want to be part of this? So, because you aren't staying afloat too well there by yourself.
Yeah.
So, well, also in the World Motorsport Council meeting that took place here in the last couple days, it is now appearing as though they're going to go ahead and do, as we reported earlier, the qualifying stage concept on the gravel rounds of the rally. As you remember, we had some serious issues with tactics and teams not necessarily agreeing to these tactics, and, you know, not a big fan. That's now come into a little bit more detail here. Okay, so there's going to be a stage set aside for qualifying. Those stages, teams will get two runs through the stage during a two-hour window. It's going to be like a free practice, kind of like an F1, where you got like an hour and a half to 2 hours to just go out there and tool around and set up your car. Well, these are basically going to allow the drivers to go out, set two passes through the stage as fast as they can, and then that will set the field for that next day. So those drivers will be able to pick. So if you're first fastest, you get to pick where you start. If you're second fastest, you get to pick what's left, and so on and so on. So let's see this. It's kind of hard to understand how they're going to be doing this. Okay, so the first qualifying stage of the year, because remember, this is only for loose surfaces. This isn't for tarmac, because tarmac, the surface doesn't really have much to do with in tarmac. Some may present the argument that yes, it does. I say no, it doesn't. So I don't think it really does. And so the first qualifying stage is going to be in Sweden at the Karlstad Super Special. So they're going to set up on Thursday. They're going to set up the Super Special, and then the cars are going to take to it, and then you have 2 hour window, and then whoever the fastest is after two passes gets to pick where they start. Bada bing. Hmm. So there you have it.
I like the idea. The one thing I don't like about the idea is the fact that you're only doing it on gravel rallies.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any difference on the pavement rallies. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Just wish there was some way they could make it a ubiquitous thing instead of, we just happen to be on this surface, so we've got to do the procedure this way.
Yeah. It's really sad, too. It shows just kind of what they've done, to really – the tactics have really ate away at the – at the fabric, if you will, of the sport, because everybody's just whatever. Yeah. So let's see. We also have streaming. Also, keep your eyes peeled for WRC streaming this year as well here in the States. They did some streaming on WRC.com of Rally France. and they drew in massive numbers. And so now it looks as though we could see perhaps more streaming as the FIA and the WRC move to a more streaming kind of programming. I would take anything at this point. I'm like a fish out of water. So if you want to
anything alive.
Yeah, anything live, not 3 weeks old where I've already know the results, have wrote about the results, and oh yeah, by the way, talked extensively on a podcast about the results. Because it just doesn't make watching it that much fun.
Nice.
So, all right, let's see. Formula One, let's get into Formula One. We'll wrap up the show here with some Formula One. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, well, as I mentioned in the WRC section, the World Motorsports Council has met, which you know what that means. The people come from all four corners of the world. It's like a pilgrimage to Europe, and more specifically, to France. So there's some key tweaks to the Formula One technical and sporting regulations that mm-hmm. we should cover. The changes are pretty much, for the most part, things that we've heard of before. Definitely, the blown diffusers and all that use of the exhaust gases and manners other than exiting the car have been wiped out. But now, in 2012, this I'm getting from ESPNF1.com, including stoppages for red flags will only be allowed to run for 4 hours after the rain-affected Canadian Grand Prix ran to 4 hours and 5 minutes earlier this year. So you will miss that last 5 minutes of racing.
That's an important 5 minutes.
It is. Unfortunately, you know, this doesn't really matter. It did in Canada. But it doesn't really matter because the fact of the matter is the lapped cars, or I'm sorry, not the lapped cars, but the rain delays. I was reading ahead in the article there, unintentionally. The rain delays, usually if it's like Malaysia or like Singapore is kind of a bad example, but if it's Malaysia where it seemingly always rains, or maybe Japan. Usually the rain delays, if the race is going to get called pretty quick. Canada was a little bit of a different beast this year. They kind of stuck around and hung out, which was awesome for us here in the States, because that meant that the Canadian Grand Prix that was getting aired live on Fox ran like all day. So we were getting maximum, like, you know, F1 exposure here in the States to the benefit of the rain delay, which then caught, you know, people to watch the race, and then seeing that brilliant finish where Jenson Button was able to overtake Sebastian Vettel after Vettel made a mistake on the super wet track. But we got that good exposure, and that's always good. But next year, not so much. That 5 minutes, gone. 4 hours, after the rain effect, 4 hours, if there's a red flag, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's called.
Yeah.
Other
changes before the car returns to the pits, all lapped cars will be allowed to unlap themselves. The entire field who happens to be a lap down shall get the lucky dog.
That is stupid.
I'm a little concerned about this, you know, for a couple of reasons. I don't think it should happen. I think that for competitive reasons, you've put those cars between you and the other cars on the track.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, if you're going to embrace this, this is, the next thing that you can do is go ahead and start doing double wide restarts and fun. And hey,
shut up! You know the FIA listens to this show sometimes. They've taken our ideas before.
Three wide restarts. Three wide restarts.
If they hear you, they'll make it a rule. They will call a special session of the World Motorsport Council if they hear you talking right now. Shut up.
In F1, this has a lot of bearing on the racing. Having those lapped cars, because let's be honest, if you're a lapped car in F1, you really suck.
Nice.
For the most part, that means, well.
10th place back.
Well,
been put in your place by Mike Weitzel.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
So, Marugia, Caterham, send him your hate mail.
Sauber, SDR, Renault.
Oh, Renault, come on.
Renault's there. I mean, if you characteristically finish races a lap down, you're there.
Well, not next year. They got Kimi Raikkonen.
No, they you know, we'll get into this, but they hired Romain Grosjean, and then they've got Kimi Raikkonen, and they're saying, you know, they made a press release this week saying, well, the biggest thing about this is it proves that we're, you know, more interested in competition than we are getting money from drivers who have money. So we went out and hired drivers based on skill and talent. Really? Because if you were doing that, you wouldn't hire Kimi Raikkonen after he's been gone for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're making the way for Robert Kubica to come back in the middle of the season, because Raikkonen comes in, has a miserable start to the season, mumbles during press conferences, and they boot him back to, you know, snowmobile racing.
So I say he's got nothing left.
Indeed.
Well, I have to say, and I hate to do this to you, Mike, being so close to the holidays and everything, but because you mentioned that, three wide and two wide restarts, you're fired.
Okay.
There you have it, folks. Suddenly, it's not happening.
I have less to do around the holidays, and I get just the same amount of money from my work.
There you have it. Everybody's been calling for it. They've been calling for somebody's head. And I haven't, and you've gingerly danced around my attempts to fire you in recent weeks. But you mentioning the two wide and three wide restart after you know the FIA takes our cheesy ideas, that's just over the edge, man. I'm gonna have to let you go.
Wait! I've got this great idea.
Oh, crap.
What we do is we put a button in the cockpit, and you push the button, and you know what happens when you push the button? This big old flap on the rear wing opens up, and the car just shoots on down the track ahead of the car that it's trailing. I think it's a great idea.
That's awesome. I don't know why we haven't thought of this before.
I think 4-year-olds came up with that idea.
May I mention...
They just took away the flames that the 4-year-olds suggested.
Oh, yeah. They're like, flames on all the cars. Has to happen.
Flames shooting out the back.
Actually, there for a second when you said, you know, reach down and push the button, I was really going to hope you were going to say a giant red Koopa shell came out.
Koopas.
Boop, boop. So, yeah, run over little question mark blocks on the start-finish line. Sebastian Vettel's got a banana peel. Oh, nice. But Mark Webber's taking it out with his green Koopa shell. Nice play by Mark Webber. He's going to be in running for a podium yet.
You know, that Nintendo karting, it took place in Indianapolis this weekend, and and Mario won.
Wow.
Tony Stewart ate the fire mushroom.
Oh, Lord, help.
Anyway, going on.
Yes, technical regulations changing. ECU setup and control parameters, which were formerly contained only within whatever, are now relevant parts of the technical regulations. The exhaust tailpipes must face backwards now and have gases off the car as much as they can, basically. No more blown diffuser. And better marking of in-car emergency switches operated by marshals are now stipulated, because you know that you can be a volunteer at those things and do whatever you want. And the side impact structures will now have to be subjected to a further push-off test.
Yeah.
Apparently, this year's Boys Have At It mentality in Formula One has asked the technical, you know, think tanks to make the side pods a little stronger. Because apparently the boys are getting vicious and using them as weapons.
Just ask Luham.
Yeah. Yeah, that rule was probably, we could probably dub it the Lewis Hamilton rule. Yeah. Let's see, sporting regulation changes?
None of that's a big surprise. I mean, obviously they were putting an emphasis on getting rid of anything to do with blown aero. Mm-hmm. So they're ducting the air exhaust tailpipes and chimneys and everything. Everything's going to be nice and tight. The ECU control parameters, they're boxing that down, so you can't even have separate engine maps and things like that. They're going to be mandated from the ECUs to make sure that you don't do this off-throttle blown action that they have been doing. So, yeah.
Well, here's a couple interesting sporting regulations here. Drivers may no longer move back onto the racing line, having moved off it to defend a position. Mm. I will dub this the Michael Schumacher rule.
Yes. I've made a block, and I'm going to weave in front of you very slowly to make sure you can't get by.
See, even now, in the days where he's not winning races or championships, Michael Schumacher still dictates the FIA's rules. They're trying to keep the man down. Either that or Lewis Hamilton whined and threw toys out of the pram at the World Motorsports Council meeting until somebody did something about it. He's like, yeah. Did you see what that guy did to me?
Did you see what Massa did to me, you know, my rival on the track, because I apparently can't get up there with the rest of the guys and be rivals with them, so, you know.
One three-day test will be carried out during the season, so yay. Mid-season testing is back, sort of, at a very... Yeah. Very, very, very limited basis. Oh, and here's...
I'm not sure I like the idea of one three-day test. I would really like it if there were a handful of tests carried out throughout the season, yeah. Maybe even built into the schedule. You know,
I'm all for doing it like MotoGP. Have a test after each Grand Prix, like that Monday after. Test new parts.
That would make sense.
You're already there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much more it would cost. I'd have to get into the financial analytics of that, but I don't see why you couldn't just stay another day. So, this is a good one. You'll like this one. In an event to make stewards do their jobs better and, I guess, reach more timely decision than waiting till after the race to hand out penalties, all stewards' decisions, which are not subject to appeal, insert all of them, are now in one place instead of being in various places within the regulations. So now you can't. Now the stewards can just go, here's Appendix 7, Chapter 5 of the sporting regulations. Here's everything that you can do to piss us off.
And nice.
We can give you a penalty.
And that just makes it easier for stewards' reference during the race so that, you know, said driver, you know, does something knuckleheaded like cuts off Michael Schumacher and tries to take him into the grass or something like that, like Vitaly Petrov did. And they just go through the rule book and they say, well, this rule applies and this rule applies and this rule ambiguously applies. But this one here's the winner because they can't appeal it. Ha! It's the handy-dandy reference.
Yeah, see this. Oh, well, in other news, this is just an ass pain that won't go away. The Austin Grand Prix, the United States Grand Prix that was on, then was off, is now on again, apparently, as track chiefs have announced construction will resume immediately, and with that, the people have reached an agreement with Bernie Ecclestone, and construction is now going on in hopes that the race can still be held in 2012.
Yes. And here's how that all went down. Tavo Helmand had a deal with Bernie to do the race for $25 million sanctioning fee. Tavo defaulted on his contract, was unable to get his end of the deal put together. Circuit of the Americas wanted to pick up that contract, but Bernie said,
That's so fast.
You can pick up the contract, but it's not the same deal. Tavo was going to get it for $25 million. For you, it's $35
million. Ooh. And so, they said, okay, deal.
Well, they had to. They're already $100 million in the till for the track.
Yep.
If you've built you don't spend $100 million on a road course if you're not going to run Formula One there. So basically, Bernie had them over a barrel, and it was Bernie Ecclestone politics right there. Who knows? This may have even been staged. Tavo, here's the deal. I want to get a race in Austin. So what we're going to do, you and I are going to work together. You get the track to build, play everything coy up to the last minute, and then just default on the contract. We'll be fine. We're good. And then we'll jack up the sanctioning fee on them. How's that? That sound good? I'll give you a cut.
Yeah, I'll give you a cut. I'll help you. I'll help you out, buddy.
And then if it comes to it in a court of law, if you were blackmailed for that money because you were going to go tell somebody I was running my own private trust.
Nice. And I don't want to end up like that Antonov guy.
So, yeah. So, Austin's back on. I got an exultant email from Circuit of the Americas talking about how, you know, we the fans have made this happen. No, you the morons have signed a check. That's yeah. how this all happened. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what the ticket prices are when they do finally come out and see what a 3-day weekend pass would put me back for going to Austin. And then I'll just kind of kick back and say, yeah, I think I got other things to do.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, USAC Sprint Car schedule has kind of come out. It was at the Motorsport Trade Show this past week in Indianapolis, and it was circulated. It's not up on their website yet, but I'm looking at that pretty heavily.
Nice.
There's a lot of good sprint car racing coming up next year.
Let's see. In other news, Bernie Ecclestone is standing, is digging the trenches and filling the sandbags as he prepares to go to war and in hopes to keep Bahrain on the schedule. Apparently bombs and people being killed and violent political uprising is not enough to keep one Mr. Bernie Ecclestone away from Bahrain and Formula One being there, as he's now pushing to further make sure that happens in 2012.
Here's Bernie Ecclestone showing his command of the facts in evidence. Bernie, quote, "We have been assured that this is not what's happening," he said. "In fact, they had a report made, allegedly independent. What did the report say? Yes, there were instances or whatever, but I wanted to go out there. I was happy to go. I'd like to go into the prison or the hospital or whatever and ask what actually happened."
Yeah.
What? You moron.
Yeah, have fun with that.
You know, listening to Joe Sayward and his continuing expounding upon the situation, one of the things that he keeps pointing out is the FIA has very clear rules about not becoming a political organization and staying out of picking sides in political situations. I would say that this is very clearly one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to
get – when you have a country burning down and people alleging huge human rights abuses, regardless of which side the abuses are actually taking place on, which it seems pretty weighted against the Bahraini government, I think you would agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess, and the FIA probably doesn't have any business being there, you know, when they basically almost find the Turkish Grand Prix out of existence when they decided to pull a political stunt and have the Cypriot leader get up there to give a trophy out. How can they in their right mind go to Bahrain?
Bernie says they're going.
Hey, Bernie, it's all there. And then Bernie goes on, "We pulled out of South Africa years ago because of apartheid."
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Past results don't indicate future results, whatever. Past performance doesn't indicate future results. Is that the investment term? There you go.
I think it is. Well, because Bernie knows everything, and he's been talking a lot lately, he's come out and said that Lewis Hamilton's choice of management, that being the man who's responsible for American Idol and a lot, was a terrible decision, and splitting away from his daddy was a really bad call because these people are more focused on the
they're more focused on they're more focused on helping Lewis Hamilton make money, not Bernie Ecclestone make money.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, more interested in the entertainment aspects of him. And his dad would have been so much better, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was winning races with his dad.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Apparently, Mr. Ecclestone is unhappy with it because he's, I guess they made a Ice-T, who's a famous rapper, especially here in the United States. He made a music video. I don't know if you remember this, right around the time of the Canadian Grand Prix. Lots of profanity-laced lyrics And a lot of making fun about the steering wheel on said Formula One car costing more than fans' houses. definitely not the way you want to go there, Lewis. I know your management thought it was a good idea. Daddy probably was not so impressed, but, you know, that actually got Bernie Ecclestone to send a letter to McLaren saying, hey, I don't like that. That's not what Formula One's all about. It's about drunk Finn guys in monkey suits falling off yachts. At least he didn't swear, and he didn't assault the fans, which
Apparently, Bernie sent a letter to McLaren, you know, voicing his complaint, saying, we are the 1%.
Occupy Formula One! Oh, Lord. Bernie. So we'll see how that goes. See if maybe eventually Lewis leaves this management firm and heads back into the realm of his family. But, yeah. You know, not good. Not good times, but yeah, interesting to see Bernie speaking out about that. Bernie speaks out about everything. Let's see. Also, Sauber announced that they were leaving the Formula One Teams Association along with Ferrari and Red Bull. And more recent news, Scuderia Toro Rosso may also leave, which is really interesting because that would be all the Ferrari teams. If you want an engine, damn it, you're going to leave.
Kamui needs horsepower, so
yeah.
let's keep it in with the mother team.
Yeah, exactly. Let's keep it real here. So, be interesting to see how that's going as more political posturing on the business side of Formula One comes up as the teams and the drivers look to, or mainly the teams, look to find any possible way they can to benefit from the Concorde Agreement and everything going on with that. So, interesting. And the story to end all stories. Renault, as it was made rather apparent by everybody, signed Kimi Raikkonen to come and drive their car because Robert Kubica was in doubt of, you know, his status with the team and ability to drive in 2012 was in doubt. And now, apparently, Kimi Raikkonen nearly screwed the pooch as he had a snowmobile accident in Australia this past weekend. And he's, I guess, basically at the end of the day, sprained his wrist slightly. It was a little pain in his wrist, maybe a light sprain there. But, he said, we're good to go. So the potential curse that could have been Renault or Lotus Formula One number one driver status has not claimed Mr. Raikkonen, as he had enough vodka in his system to just shake it off.
Yeah. Now, if you, he went all limp bodied.
Yeah.
Like, he was fine.
He's okay. He'll get up. He's actually more hungover than anything. It doesn't even have anything to do with the accident.
When consulted after the accident, Raikkonen was quoted as saying, I have a headache.
If in that vodka is very good to me and it has given me slight headache and I mumble.
It's good to have you back, Kimmy.
I know, right? Damn it. This guy's awesome. I mean, the guy does whatever the hell he wants, and I can applaud that because, you know, I oftentimes do whatever I want, and it doesn't always work out for me either. So I know where he's coming from, and he's a good character. And you know what? I will like Kimi Raikkonen a lot this year, provided his work ethic is there. If the dude works and tries to be good at the sport, I will like him. If he shows me what he showed me at the end of his Ferrari contract, I will continue to hate him.
Nice.
Because there's no room for that. There are plenty of other drivers out there who'd kill to be in his position, and they'd be willing to put in the hard hours to do it. Nick Heidfeld's one of them.
Yeah. And, you know, before we go off the deep end, you know, throwing Raikkonen under the bus for possibly putting Renault in the same situation that they were in last year, I can't remember the entire list, but there was a long list of F1 associated names that were also competing in this event. So if you know, Raikkonen did destroy his wrist, you know, he would have been one of many who would have been risking it from the F1 paddock. So
yeah, so I'm happy. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. But Mr. Raikkonen was finally given a teammate. As you remember, the Renault seat was very hotly contested. You have the likes of Vitaly Petrov, Adrian Sutil was coming free. Let's see, they had Bruno Senna was on the short list of names. And then their GP2 champion, Romain Grosjean, also on the list. Yeah, and Mr. Grosjean, whose hair has been slightly tamed.
With a whip and a chair.
With a whip and a chair. No! If you're driving here, no!
Sit!
Yeah, exactly. The bedhead look for Mr. Grosjean has been canceled, and in return for Grosjean's good faith in having his hair chopped off, he has been awarded the seat alongside Kimi Raikkonen for Lotus. So, bringing in championship skill level caliber to the team, not pay drivers. That's the kind of operation you run at Renault, and why you will finish last.
And you know, let's you know, throw it out there. This will be come December 31st. January 1st, it will be known as Lotus. So Lotus Renault, or whatever they want to call themselves. Lotus is taking over that operation, and it's going to be interesting to see how this one goes.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So I guess we'll see where it ends up. I have high faith in Raikkonen to be a lot better than Roman, but Roman, you know, he's won the GP2 championship, done a little growing up since his last tenure with Renault, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits in the grand scheme of things for sure. So,
well, let's just make a slight prediction here. Renault next year, based on what we see right now, are they better than Sauber?
Yes.
Better than STR?
Yes.
Better than Force India?
Depends on the lineup.
I'm saying they're gonna be better than Force India.
I think they'll be a little bit better than Force India, but not quite as good as a Mercedes.
No. I don't see them getting into Mercedes. I think Mercedes is gonna be a better team next year.
Yeah.
I think they're gonna be significantly closer to the Ferrari direction of the grid, and who knows where they're going to end up next year, but I think a solid fifth for Renault is probably the best they can hope for with their bold move of hiring pay drivers.
No skill drivers.
Paid. Yeah, I was meaning it.
Oh, you know, yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
They're getting a salary them instead of bringing the salary with them.
Yes. Understand now. There you go. Yeah, well, I guess we shall see how it is. I don't think they'll challenge Mercedes. I think Mercedes will be third or fourth on the championship. And I think for sure, you know, I think Renault will be right behind them. And I think Force India will be knocking on the door, depending on how well Hülkenberg and Duresta do, if they are in fact the ones who are sworn in to drive the Sahara Force India, whatever we're going to call it next week, if it's for sale. But not really for sale. But no, it really is for sale, team. So, all right. Well, that concludes all we have on the notes. I really can't think of anything else that we have. Do you have anything else?
Nope.
All right. Well, with that being said, we'd like to thank you for listening. Be sure that you can always head over to facebook.com/openpaddock and find us there. Also, twitter.com/openpaddock and follow us on the Twitter. Also I think our staff page should have our personal Twitter accounts. So if you want to go through a weekend in the life of me, you can. If you want to hear about Doug and Mike talking about random motorsports things together and not including me on their tweets, you can follow them. I'm kidding. But yeah, that's it. And also, don't forget, you can head over to iTunes, and you can also, you know, rate our show on iTunes. Let us know what you really think about us. All that we ask is that you listen to a couple shows and don't hold our Kimi Räikkönen comments against us. We really love the guy. We just have to give somebody shit.
Yes, obviously, and if Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke is more your style, follow Sean.
Really? How would you even put me in that category? I don't do illegal drugs, Mike.
I'm just having a little fun with you, man.
Gosh, I am not into illegal substances. I do not substance abuse anything. However, I will say the one thing that did put me over the edge this weekend was some Jameson's Irish whiskey.
Very nice. Yep. That's some proper stuff.
It was vicious, too. I actually, the guy, quick story, be real quick. The guy who won it, because it was a gift set that was given out as an office gift. You picked your little...
didn't make it home.
Yeah, I know. I conned him, and I kind of feel bad about it, but I conned him into opening it up at the table, and then like five or six people came over and just started taking shots. And I'm pretty sure the bottle was dusted before it even sniffed the exit door.
Nice.
So yeah, we did two of those bad boys right away, and I'll tell you what, I think that was about the pit that did it. Well, no, because we did those after, because I remember that I had to have some help getting back to the old house, and I did not take that Porsche under anything. So it did leave the exit doors, but we took them to the bar. So, you know, trouble. If we're coming to your bar, if I'm coming to your bar, chances are I have trouble in tow. So, in the form of smuggled Jamesons. So, all right. Well, on that bombshell, now, that's all we have for this week. It was requested that we have exit music on the show because people were tired of waiting to hear us stop talking and then have like 5 minutes of
dead air.
So I have put together my favorite song of all time. I've made a slight little exit music. It's nothing special. It's just to let you know that the show is over. So until next week, we'll be back at the same time, the same channel. Mike, say goodnight.
Good night. The show is over.
Good night. Show's over. Listen to the music.
Who knows what heights we'll hear. Oh, never mind.
You're fired.
On.